If you have moderate to severe Crohn's disease, you should not listen to this podcast. If you have internal grievous, you should not listen to this podcast. It will cause you to anally bleed. If you have the shakes and the vapors, if you have dropsy, if you have Rebunctin's disorder, you should not listen to this podcast. If you suffer from Munchausen by proxy, then you probably shouldn't be listening. My friend, my motherfucker. It is Monday, April the 10th, 2023, Bo Blimp Doc. And, you know, if you live in Canada or someplace like that, Monday, today's a holiday, right? It's Easter holiday. I mean, they really respect Christ up there in Canada with that medically assisted suicide. I mean, really, you know, you gotta say, in a lot of ways, in many ways, brothers and sisters, as I sip a little bit of my coffee, fuck you. In many, 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 many subtle, critical fucking ways, the COVID-19 military psychological warfare operation, the trauma-based mind control, was a lot like medically assisted suicide, just done at a population scale. Really. Go on the ventilators. Make sure you go on the ventilators. Hey, it's 100 degrees out. Make sure you're wearing 2 coffee filters. Yeah, take this fucking bullshit warp speed vaccine that came out of Nowhereville, and anybody who has experience in healthcare would tell you it's probably some kind of crooked fucking poison. But go ahead and take this warp speed vaccine. The orange Cheeto Bandito told you to do so.
He couldn't stop Fauci. Trump could not stop Fauci.
He was too weak. He was too small. He was too stupid. He was. But he was president, though. And the presidents in my lifetime have done incredibly crooked shit when and if they wanted to include firing whatever motherfucker they wanted to fire if you believe what you're told about the good democracy and the voting bullshit. Of course, I think that's all crap, but a lot of motherfuckers do believe in the voting. Anyways, if you have Strumbo or Blimp, you should not listen to this podcast. If you have asthma of the anus, you should not listen to this podcast. If someone recently took a metal spike and shoved it way up your butt, causing your insides to burst, you should not listen to this podcast. If you recently had a heart attack because the woman you loved, she left you for some guy that fixes toilets, you shouldn't listen to this podcast. But it is Monday, April the 10th, just after 7 a.m. for all you folks out there in Scompton. Here in the fine state of Utah, a place where a man can feel safe to be safe, feeling like he's a man. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. The soft landing is Powell's helicopter landing on the evacuation ship without incident okay? The soft landing is like 19, I don't know, the mid-1970s, right? The fall of Saigon, all those helicopters pushed off of ships. The soft landing is like, you know, you go into the underground system. You enter the portal at Denver Airport, and you get to take the fun ride to a bunker called the soft landing. Well, actually, the bunker's not called the soft landing. It's called Bunker Z22-Y. But in Bunker Z22-Y, there's an underground bar for all the special people called Soft Landing. Right next to it is a dance club called The Reset, shithead. Yes, indeed. If there's a soft landing, it's a bar in a bunker. It's Powell's helicopter. That's Jerome Powell, Fed Chair. He's got a helicopter on hot standby, baby. It's the helicopter landing on the evacuation ship. Like, it's, I don't know, was it 1975? The fall of Saigon? I think it was 75 or 76. Anywho, you can imagine him landing his helicopter on the evacuation ship, and because more helicopters have to land and there's finite space, well, it's kind of like those Time magazine photos. You got to push helicopters off the ship because more helicopters are coming in because people are scared shitless of the Viet Cong. And, you know, in this case, it's not the Viet Cong. In this case, it's hundreds of millions of people in the United States, and probably billions of people worldwide. And again, I'm describing the best case scenario here. In my opinion, this is as good as it gets. Lots of people in the world, so angry, so pissed off, they would just assume kill Jerome Powell and kill every banker that they can find. That's, I think, the best case scenario. And that's why they've been doing what they've been doing. That's why they've attempted to turn everybody against everybody. If you want a non-biblical explanation, if you want a description that doesn't involve the signs of the times and is simply the banal explanation of history, that people do what people do, and often people are shitheads, and if you piss off people in large numbers, you better have a hole to go to. There is no way out of this mess. There isn't. I know that they're feeding the system with lots of propaganda. And there's lots of that propaganda that is what I would call techno-propaganda, which means there's going to be a magical cure. There's a magical solution. Whatever problem we face, some kind of fucking magic will come along. And that might be true, brothers and sisters. It might be true. It probably would be true in a free society. But in this crooked neo-Stalinist hellhole, it's maybe true. It's hard to say. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm fairly certain nobody is orbiting the moon next year. Fairly certain of that. Almost 100%. Let's call it 90%. I'm fairly certain that's almost like a, you know, kind of a marker, so to speak. Not maybe not on purpose, but if you're sensitive to the shit going on, it's a marker. It's a road sign. You know, if you're sensitive to this crooked shit, you should know that in a way, they're telling you that 2024 is awfully fucking hypothetical. And a lot of strange things could happen, but maybe mostly the show's over by then. Who knows? I'm wagering that that's what Act 3 looks like. Maybe Act 3 does look like the reset. Maybe Jerome Powell flies to his condo in Switzerland. But my guess is, for about 20 to 30, maybe 50 years, these motherfuckers have planned to live underground, and then their kids or grandkids can crawl out. Maybe they got suspended animation, I doubt it, but their kids or their grandkids can crawl out of their cave, and maybe by then people will forget. I doubt it. I doubt it. I'm an Irishman, I can tell you. The human memory for revenge goes back thousands of years. You know? There was a joke. It wasn't a joke. People were serious. But there were people back in the 60s and 70s and even the 80s who would have told you that Marshall Tito had solved the problem of ethnic division, the ethnic people hating each other in a place called Yugoslavia. Yeah. That place doesn't exist any longer. For the same reason you'd be a stupid motherfucker if you think 50 years is long enough. It's not. Okay, people will pass their revenge, their hate, from generation to generation. You can go to whatever hole, whatever cave, whatever fucking building you want to go to. If your plan is not to kill all of us, enough of us will remember who you are, and you won't survive, and your grandchildren won't survive. And in all likelihood, there will be cults, religious cults formed with only one purpose, to get as much gasoline as possible and to pour it down your fucking air vents. So yeah, I think there is a soft landing, in a sense. I think Powell's helicopter will take off. I think they'll drop his ass where they drop the asses of a lot of other motherfuckers. And they'll all hope and pray that 50 years or 100 years or 1,000 years is long enough. But it's probably not. And the other thing is this. I've said this before. I'll say it again. You know, and I won't talk about Biosphere 2. That's just too dumb a topic that a lot of techno-utopians like to ignore. They simply don't understand it. Here's what I'll say. Even if they had nothing but German engineers, the likelihood that they're going to build a bunker system that will function correctly, okay, for 50 years, I think is zero. And I say function correctly without any outside input, okay? You can say, well, Dan, NORAD, Cheyenne Mountain has been around longer than 50 years, and that's true. But they have outside input. They got trucks rolling in, trucks rolling out. If they need to replace a light bulb, they too can go on Amazon if they wanted to. You're talking about an enclosed community for 50 fucking years. And what I'm telling you is that something will go wrong. And it won't have an easy solution. And people will look around, who knows how to fix this? And it won't be like Apollo 13. They won't magically create an air scrubber. And all those people will just die of CO2 and carbon monoxide poisoning. Okay, way more likely than they're so brilliant and so smart that they built bunkers that'll work for 50 years. So that's the thing, folks. Nobody ends up unscathed. Nobody, okay? The powerful will end up in their own hell, and the ordinary people will have their own problems and their own sins to deal with, and there isn't going to be a soft landing. There's not going to be a truck that shows up to take you to a FEMA camp that doesn't have anybody there to operate as a guard anyways, that doesn't have any concertina wire or barbed wire, that looks more like the shanty town, you know, in Atlas Shrugged, where supposedly in Mexico they were mining, but really just cardboard. No, they're not going to pick you up to take you to Nowhereville. If you're in a city, they'll just leave your ass there. And they'll tell you, maybe they'll tell you help's coming. I mean, these are motherfuckers. They might have on the radio 24/7, help is coming. Help is coming. Help is coming, Seattle. Just hold on another day. Help is coming, San Francisco. You just keep holding on, baby. Help's coming, Los Angeles. Yeah, we're gonna help you. People call us helpers. Yeah, you hold on for another day if you want to. That's your business. I don't know what to tell you. Don't know what to tell you. Next topic, I think, though. Next topic. I'm just going to say that there's not going to be a soft landing. Whatever comes next is going to be brutal. And it could be hyperstatism. I don't think it's going to be because I don't think they have the juice. I think they have a lot of psyops. They have a lot of Quaker guns. They can create a lot of bullshit fear. This is true. But I think they're driving people crazy. That's the net effect of what they're doing. And the problem with crazy people is at a certain point, they don't behave rationally even according to your shitty B.F. Skinner payout models. They start doing weird shit that's completely fucking unpredictable. They start going to work at the boiling water reactor and they force it into a scram event that then shuts down the water flow, and then the cooling rods melt, you know, the control rods melt, and then the fun starts, you know? You don't know what a motherfucker's gonna do if you drive a motherfucker batshit crazy. And a lot of the jobs might be flipping the burger or frying the potatoes. A lot of jobs might be really dumb, like, oh, would you like to buy a fucking cell phone? And then a few people have jobs like flying a plane or doing surgery or, I don't know, managing the sewer system. And, you know, boiling water reactors, those two. We have a couple. I'd be willing to wager those people, the engineers that work on boiling water reactors at this point, are probably very much under surveillance all the time right now. My guess is their social media, their phone calls, their mail, all deeply monitored if you work at a BWR. Just saying. It's about priorities, shithead. Anyways, next topic. If you're going to be wrong, at least be funny, Dr. Freckles. If you're going to be wrong, at least be funny. What does that mean? Well, this might not be a very big topic. It could be very short. When I started this podcast, I never claimed to be Svengali or, you know, infinitely knowledgeable or some type of super genius or whatever. I had an opinion, a perspective, and I wanted to share it with people. And, you know, I had one or two people tell me more than a decade ago, you should do some kind of podcast on YouTube or something. And I don't know. I listened to them believing they were giving me good advice. In retrospect, it's hard to say. I mean, it really is. I don't know if there was ever going to be an opportunity for all the voices to be heard. I mean, if you're a voice right now, talking up crypto. Put your money in crypto. Put your money in video cards. Put your money in companies that make video cards or other technology. Because that's really what crypto is in a lot of ways. It's a Keynesian make-work scheme for producing computers in a lot of ways. Lots of people made money off of selling servers and video cards and whatnot, and they're still making money selling mining rigs. So it's a make-work thing. It's great. If you talk up the Keynesian make-work broken windows thing, you're going to do okay? You're going to do great. If you criticize it, you're probably not going to do great. If you talk up the Ukraine war, either, oh my God, you know, we got to support the Ukrainians, or if you talk up the whole we shouldn't be in the Ukraine, you're probably going to be fine. If you have the third position, which is maybe the Ukraine war itself is total bullshit, yeah, you're probably going to get buried, fuckhead. If you talk up the most dangerous bioweapon in history that came from Wuhan, China, and magically killed people and killed the flu and killed preventable hospital-acquired infection, yeah, so that those two things kind of disappeared for a couple years, you're going to do great talking up the COVID. Talking up the monkey herpes. Oh my God, you know, it's like, what was he saying, that dude? Peak prosperity, dude. Back in, you know, the spring of 2020, the COVID's crawling up your poop pipe. The COVID's crawling up your poop pipe. The COVID's coming up the poop pipe. Better be careful, fuckhead. If you were talking up the fear of the Wuhan pangolin, monkey bear, wet market poop virus, the monkey herpes, the COVID, if you talked it up, big time fear in 2020, you probably did pretty well. If, on the other hand, you said that the whole thing was probably bullshit, you probably didn't do so well. If you talked up the George Floyd race war and all that other, you know, Andy No Clue, Ian Miles wrong bullshit, George Soros commies are, no, well, I mean, George Soros commies work for the same people that George Soros works for, fuckhead, okay? Call it the deep state, call it what you want to. They work for the same people. Since I've got on video some Seattle employees admitting that they were there in Chapchas to actually help out the commies, I can at least show that the city of Seattle was fully involved. And if you think the city of Seattle is not infiltrated with feds, you're a real fucking dumbass. I don't know. Have you looked at a fucking map, you shitheads? Have you seen Lewis McChord? I don't know. There's a nuclear sub base not far away. You don't think Seattle is deep fed as fuck? You're a fucking moron. So yeah, the feds put on Chazchopia. And if you told people that the feds put on Chazchopia, that videotaping the Seattle bike police dressed as, you know, black-clad BLM would get you in trouble, if you told people the truth about that prison burning down next door that you lived to that didn't actually burn down, but the Guardian said it did, you're not going to be heard. Okay? If you say that there's something problematic about the good people of a neighborhood videotaping a man being slowly killed for 8 minutes, you're not going to be heard. Period. End of sentence. So I don't know if this podcast is worthwhile, but I will say this. Even when it comes to topics that are kind of scary, I do try to be funny. I don't know. I don't think I've been mostly wrong. I didn't see the whole picture in 2019, but when I told people, get ready for Freddy, I think I was doing right. I didn't tell them 10 years earlier, 5 years earlier. I didn't say, it's here, it's now, at any other time. I said, guess what? It's here. In 2015, I would have said it's about 5 years away. That seems about fucking accurate, too. But does that mean I got everything right? No. But at least when I got things wrong, I tried to be funny. Next topic, motherfucker, because it's Monday and people here in the United States of America have to work, right? Here's another quote from Dr. Freckles. Beyond all the tradition and fanfare bullshit, the military has been a magnet for lost boys and some lost girls throughout history. Dr. Freckles. What does that mean? Beyond all the tradition, beyond all the fanfare bullshit, the military has been a magnet for lost boys and some lost girls throughout history. Well, here's the thing. I was in the military. I gotta tell you, I don't know if I did it for the right reasons. I don't know if I was technically a lost boy back then, but, you know, my dad had died a few years earlier, and I didn't really have any kind of plan for my 20s, if that's the truth. I had, you know, some college, some this, some that, but for the most part, I didn't really have a plan. And the military was something where it's like, oh, you don't need a plan, just go in. Go in and be in the military. Not really proud of the decision, not really ashamed. But I wouldn't tell you in retrospect that it was 100%, you know, idealistic. You know, I did ROTC, I got a commission. I got a regular Army commission, which back then was relatively rare, because RA meant, basically, they told me it was the same as, you know, graduating from West Point, whatever the hell that means, really. But yeah, I got a regular Army commission, and I could have stayed in 20 years. And if I'd gone down the road of military intelligence, I could have ended up in the CIA, and I could have ended up a really terrible shithead. I'm not saying that would have happened. There's no guarantee. But that's the road I would have gone down. And I remember meeting intelligence people when I was in the service. I met somebody that was, you know, a friend of a family friend type person who was CIA. And I remember him because it looked like him, he'd been drinking all night when I showed up to say hello. And he obviously couldn't talk about anything. So it was all, you know, good evening. Good evening, sir. Everything else is in the dark closet. Everything else is hidden behind whatever cheap whiskey you can afford in retirement and the foggy memories of people pointing guns at you. I think I would have told you in 1996 when I got my commission, I would have told you I believed this was a free republic. And I wasn't really, you know, if I told you that, I wasn't lying. I believed that. I believed back then that this was still a constitutional republic. It had issues. We had problems. There were things we had to work through. I wasn't a big fan of what happened at Waco. I wasn't a big fan of what happened at Ruby Ridge, but I didn't bring it up a lot. You know, especially after Oklahoma City. You know, I remember being in formation that day as a cadet when they talked about it. And it was like, oh boy, here we go, here we go. And at the same time, even in formation, when they were talking about Oklahoma City, this thought occurred to me, this also seems like it could be bullshit. It occurred to me briefly. So I took the commission believing I was doing something right. And I took the commission believing this was a free republic. So I took the commission and I had a couple of bad takes. I learned a lot more when I was on active duty. I spent a year in Korea. I never spent any time in combat, thank God. Kind of glad that never happened. And then I got out. I put in the minimum time I needed to and I got out. Okay? But I gotta tell you that probably my reason for being in the service is a cliche because it's probably more or less the same reason why a lot of people go in the military. And that is something is broken in their personal life. You know, something went wrong. It's not always the case. There are people who do it out of tradition. There are people who probably do it because they want to go kill somebody. I mean, I gotta say, there are people who join the military because they can't wait to blow somebody up. And you'd hope, you'd think in your heart, these people would get filtered out. But in reality, these people often are chosen because they're so gung-ho. That's great, you know? A lot of lost boys and a lot of lost girls serve in the military. A lot of people from broken lives and broken homes. I mean, I don't want to spend much more time on this topic, but before you spend too much time as an anarchist, for example, beating up on people that are in the military, understand that these are people in a lot of cases that are broken. And I'd also say that as an anarchist and as somebody who believes in freedom, it should make you feel better. Because, you know, unlike these rare times in history where it's, whether it's the Revolutionary War or the French Revolution, for example, there are rare moments in history where people join up out of some patriotic valor type reason. That does happen. But when it comes to empires and their armies, yeah, it is what it is. It's a lot like that Gene Hackman movie about the French Foreign Legion, March or Die. I think that movie's closer to the truth in a lot of ways. Anyways, next topic, fuck you, next topic. Another quote from Dr. Freckles, Firefly is a better little house on the prairie. Okay, so there was a show called Firefly, and I think they only had like one or two seasons, maybe only one season actually. I'd watched the first season definitely. And it was a show that was put together by the same folks who worked on, I think, Buffy the Vampire Slayer type stuff. So, and it was a, it was the future, spaceships, and Firefly was, this particular spaceship, I think, or type of spaceship. And it was a good show. And I'm joking because I think about the Little House on the Prairie type melodrama. And you would have the same types of things with Firefly. It's just that with Firefly, for a person like me, again, it's like the spaghetti western thing. It seemed more realistic. When I look back to the whole Little House on the Prairie, even when they did episodes that were dark, it was very much a kind of like, okay, this is the cartoon again. This is Wile E. Coyote. It's like when the mom and the dad going down the hill with a shoddy brake on their wagon end up, dying. It's horrible, but you can almost predict it. You know that's going to happen. They change the music. It's pretty obvious. Here's your sacrifice, and the rest of it can be about how nice Charles Ingalls is. I'm not opposed to the concept of heroes, by the way, because that is one of the reasons why I prefer spaghetti westerns. I don't really buy into the hero myth. I'm not opposed to the idea. I just don't think it's ever that simple. I think that there are people, maybe all of us, who have moments of courage and we do the right thing. And if it's big enough, who knows? Maybe it deserves to be called you're a hero. But for the most part, when we decide there are special people that are called heroes, it becomes a kind of cult of the personality. Somebody who, even if they are only right about one thing in their life on one day, all of a sudden people think they're right about everything. And that may be too much to put on a person, and that may be too problematic to hold inside of you. Anyways, Firefly is a better Little House on the Prairie. Watch Firefly. It's only maybe one season, I think, but it's better. Maybe it's two. There is the movie Serenity, which is the, I think that's the name of the Firefly ship. Serenity. Next topic. Next topic. Shithead Dan, you're a shithead. Oh, the garbage people. By the way, if Little House on the Prairie needed another name, and I've talked about this before, all the other names you could have for it, like, Mary Wants or this and that, I think Don't Trust Charles Ingalls would be a good fucking name for Little House, because a lot of really nice people trust Charles and they end up dead. A lot of nice people listen to Charles, they end up dead. There probably were Chinese people working on that fucking railroad. They listened to Charles and they ended up dead. You see, in season 7, episode 21, Charles is leading a family. They meet, I think, what? In Mankato. And so Charles is leading a family through the wilderness because they just need help. Charles has to make a delivery. The family needs to go to the same destination. They're pretty shoddy people. Clearly, they don't check the fucking brakes on their wagon, because when you see the little picture of the brake, you realize they didn't check their brake. Probably one of the first things you should do before creeping down a hill with a wagon team is put on the fucking brake, and if the brake don't work, then get off the fucking wagon and lead the horses back up the hill and fix the fucking brake and then go down the hill. And I'm not even a frontiersman, and I would have done that basic check. Now, again, like I said, I was in the military, and they would make you do all your PMCS bullshit, check this, check that, check this, check that, fuck you. But clearly, the preventative maintenance on this wagon was not done. Anywho, Charles is going to lead a family through the wilderness, but he ends up meeting a crossroads demon. And the crossroads demon offers to Charles that he can have the most amazing ability and talent playing the fiddle. That fiddle he loves to play after dinner for a little half pint. But Charles has to kill the family. He has to kill Alvin. He has to kill his wife. He has to kill the two little garbage kids, the ones in the back of the wagon, if he wants to play the fiddle, to play it amazingly, like the devil went down to Georgia. Charles, do you want to play the fiddle, fucker? The demon tells Charles to kill them, so Charles decides to start with Ma and Pa. It's all right, Alvin. Take the wagon down the hill. Charles remembered this thought as he shivered in the night every night after that. Come on down, Alvin. Bring that wagon down the hill. Oh, there's a bad break. Oh, your wagon looks like a shitty wagon you didn't take care of. You didn't check your brakes even before you left Mankato, you motherfucker. Your brakes all fucked up. You tried to fix your brake like a hobo, and your wife won't jump out of the wagon. Oh, I'm sorry, garbage people. And now, the children of Alvin and his wife will be orphans, like the summer freaks, feeding the whims of Eastern salesmen in Minneapolis. Oh my God, Ma. Oh my God, Pa. Oh my God, what happened? Oh my God, you're dying. Because you trusted Charles Ingalls, motherfucker. You trusted Charles Ingalls. You trusted Charles Ingalls. You trusted Charles Ingalls. You trusted Charles Ingalls. Now you're going to die. You're going to die, motherfucker, because you trusted the wrong person. Down, down, down you go. Ma and Pa, little kids sobbing. Your Ma and Pa are dead. Welcome to the frontier. Your Ma and Pa are dead. Welcome to Davy Crockett Land. Your Ma and Pa are dead. You're like Lewis and Clark. Your Ma and Pa are dead. And this is just what happens, baby, on the Oregon Trail. And you trusted Charles Ingalls. And after burying Alvin and his wife, Charles realizes that he must start with the little kids. But Albert, his garbage pail kid, who he picked up, what, didn't he pick up Albert in Mankato? Or no, Winoka. Winoka, Iowa. He picked up little Albert in Winoka. Yeah, so Albert says, but you know, can't we give at least the boy a little more time? Yeah. That's Little House on the Prairie to me. Is that Little House on the Prairie as you remember it? That's how I remember it. And just don't trust Charles Ingalls. If he's here to help you, you should have life insurance. Just saying, okay? Just saying. But that old Monzo... That old Monzo, Manly, who loves Laura Ingalls, they're married, you know. But before they got married, Almanzo needed to write Laura a letter. And here is the lost letter that he would have finished in that one episode if Laura had let him finish the letter. And maybe she would have learned some more, right? Dearest Laura, I want to, dearest Laura, I need you. Dearest Laura, you are my ginger hoe. Dearest Laura, we can strive to be rulers, rulers of the wasteland. Our children will live feral lives. Our mongrel dogs will eat old English flesh. I will resume my studies, looking into the funeral plan, and you can become that hot teacher, filling the spank bank, every boy to a man. And we shall rise up, Laura, like the phoenix after the fire shower, and those wolf rebels will bow to us and be our glower. I remember you, Laura, when you were young and nice and mild. I remember when your life was that of a child. And we would fish for big cats, and you would mock my pole, and we would laugh for hours along the meadow creek. I remember, Laura, that time that whore doctor aborted that kid, and we need to bury little Sam. Because no one wanted him, not even his mom. We were free back then, our hearts so light. I remember you that way, Laura, a fighter in the night. It's like marriage is a dopey thing, and if we get tied our hearts by a string, the minister makes promises with gliding self, and there is no meter by which the organ makes sense. It's a being stuck with somebody, but it's not a normal trap. It's the snare of ages, the ancient curse. You are bent and broken by this lost banshee, and yet you call her your wife. Dearest Laura, we will have babies. Their names will be foretold. Our children will control the Mexican, and the railroad dingo will offer the throne. Beyond our years, dearest Laura, as the gray turns to dust and the mind becomes rust, our lives will be rich, you'll be my bitch, and I love you, dearest Laura. But I need to tell you something. It's about Farmer Jack. A few years back, after the great storm took out the Haglamite clan, and the witch maidens of Quadrant 34 relented before the shirtless battle monks of Houston. A while back, when the last king bowed down and the throne was burned and the humans spurned, there was this farmer guy, Jack, Laura, and he owed me $50 for a bet we made. Don't worry about the bet. Maybe it was related to your blind sister's first kid and how long the child would live. Needless to say, Jack lost the bet and owes me $50. And I'm none too happy about it, Laura. So I go by his place with a brand new Colt 45, and I demand he pay me, but he wouldn't. So I killed him, I killed him, I killed him, I killed Farmer Jack, and I dumped his body out in the woods for the coyotes. Oh yeah, dearest Laura. I have 4 rape babies. I used to drink. I'm sober now. Yeah, I've got rape babies too. Children in different cities, Laura. How do you like them apples, Laura? Am I still manly, Laura? Do you want to marry me, Laura? Yours, Almanzo. You should have let me finish the fucking letter, signed, a.k.a. Big Blonde Shithead. Yes, there it is. There it is. There it is. There's the unfinished letter from that one fucking episode where, you know, she was impatient. If she'd let Almanzo finish the fucking letter, she would have learned the fucking truth about Farmer Jack. Yeah. And about the rape babies. Y'all know that motherfucker Almanzo had rape babies in Mankato and Springfield and Minneapolis and probably even that shithole Winoka. He had rape babies everywhere. If you like this podcast, and I'm not sure that you would or you wouldn't, it's hard to say. I hope that every once in a while I can make you smile. I hope that it's possible for people to laugh. Perhaps a superpower that we can all have right now and in the coming months and years is the power of humor. That we can use that against our enemies. That we can use it against the demons, against the darkness, against the banshees and the phantoms, and against the fear, maybe most against the fear, that we can try to at least laugh at it. You tell me about the monkey herpes COVID, you tell me about the race war, you tell me about the Ukrainians, you tell me about Zelensky, oh my God, China's gonna invade Taiwan, they're gonna have a reset, they'll put you in a FEMA camp, you know what? All of that could be true, and all of that could be bullshit, and still I say I laugh. I think it's funny. I think it's so stupid, it's funny. I do. The only thing funnier than all the psyops going on is that so many people believe them. The only thing funnier than a Dr. Fauci telling you to wear 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 coffee filters on your face is seeing a motherfucker in Seattle running in 100-degree weather with 2 or 3 coffee filters on their face. I didn't see that every day. I wasn't looking for it every day, but when I did see it in Seattle in 2020, at least it made me smile. You know? Going to the restaurant. You have your coffee filter on your fucking face. But they sit you down at the table. You can take off your coffee filter. Magical science. It works somehow, shithead. Yeah. If you can't laugh at this shit, then you'll be destroyed by it. If you can't laugh at all this fear, it's going to tear you up. If you don't have a solution, that's okay, but you don't have to incorporate the fear. You don't have to spend all day being scared of something you can't control. Do I think there are things in this world that are scary? Yes, I do. Do I believe the government's telling you the truth about them? No, I don't. That is basically my position consistently for the last 3 fucking years, is that there is a truth, but it's not being discussed. And if you want to try to find it, there is no easy answer in the empire of lies. But here's a good starting point. Look for the stories that are made fun of. Look for the stories that are mocked. Look for the stories that are marginalized. Look for the stories on the edge. And then maybe you'll be lucky enough to stumble across the truth. But even if you do, brothers, sisters, friends, enemies, even if you find that thing you think is true, it probably won't matter, and you're still better off laughing. So if you do like this podcast, and I don't know why, you can donate money to it. There's a PayPal link in the notes. You can donate. You can give me your money. But if you suffer from moderate to severe Crohn's, if your intestine is smooth, smooth as glass, if your mind is filled with parasites that are destroying you, if you've been taking Percocet for about 4 or 5 days as prescribed, and you've had cheeseburgers for every single fucking meal for 4 or 5 days and not enough water, then you can feel like a woman. Yes. You have a turd, baby. It's so big and so hard and so scrapey. You can feel like a mother giving birth to your turd, baby. It's something you can do if you can't find a reason to laugh. Become a turd parent. You can donate as much or as little as you want to, but please take care of your food, your water, your shelter first. Take care of the people you love. If you're currently buying extra food for your family and you have a pet, please think about your dog or your cat. Just don't buy the food for you and your family. Think about your dog or your cat, especially if you're a fucking optimist. If you're a motherfucking optimist, buy physical gold, buy physical silver. Have at least 6 months of food on hand, and with that food, take care of your dog or your cat. Preferably don't live in a city if you're a fucking optimist. If you're a pessimist, it won't fucking matter, really. But if you're an optimist, I'd get out of the city as soon as possible. Nobody's gonna listen, though. So if you gotta stay in the city, at least learn how to laugh. Okay? If you gotta live in the city, learn how to laugh. That sense of humor could be the thing that keeps you alive. But if you want to donate to this podcast, you can. I'll use your money to battle the ancient disease, the deep ennui, the demon of the dark soup. He lives in the toilet. He talks to you with farts.